The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints officially practices political neutrality, meaning church leaders aren't supposed to favor one side or another on a political issue. But Democratic State Representative Brian King, who is also Mormon, says he pointed out recently to a church official that most of the church leaders are registered Republicans or unaffiliated, but no church leader is a Democrat.
And this individual, who I love and respect and sustain, just looked down. Because he recognized the truth of that. And so that's the challenge, I think, that we sometimes have as Democrats here in the state of Utah, is that the diversity of political membership and affiliation, that political neutrality statement would suggest exists or should exist, doesn't really exist to the same degree among the leaders of the church.
Today on the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour, how Utah elected officials balance their faith in the LDS Church with politics and their elected duties to their constituents. But first, this news. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour. I'm Ross Chambliss. Recently, the Hinckley Institute of Politics hosted a forum on the intersection of politics and LDS church values in the state of Utah. This forum features Utah state lawmakers, or candidates for office, who are also members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The event was presented by Alliance for a Better Utah. Just a note to listeners, you can listen to this entire forum on our website or on the podcast version of this show. The panelists included Democratic candidate for House in Utah's 32nd District, Suzanne Harrison, Democratic Representative Brian King of House District 28, Republican Senator Todd Weiler of Senate District 23, and Republican Senator Howard Stevenson of Senate District 11. The conversation was moderated by Natalie Gochner. Gochner is Associate Dean of the David Eccles School of Business and the Director of the Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute at the University of Utah. You might also recognize Natalie as the co-host and moderator of KCPW's Both Sides of the Aisle. And without further ado, I'll let Natalie take it from here.
Great to be with you today. We have a great audience and we have a great panel of legislators and candidates, and I'm going to just introduce them to you as we start out our forum today. Dr. Susan Harrison, raise your hand, Suzanne. Suzanne is a candidate for, let's get this right, she's running against LeVar Christensen for the House seat in District 32, serves Sandy and Draper. Dr. Harrison is a board-certified anesthesiologist and is currently the chair of the Department of Anesthesiology for the Riverton Hospital. She's a member of the Democratic Party and also a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Let's welcome Dr. Harrison. Suzanne has agreed that I can call her Suzanne for the remainder of this. And on her left is someone who many of you know, Representative Brian King. He serves District 28, which covers Salt Lake City. He's an attorney by profession and currently serves as the House Minority Leader. Representative King is also a member of the Democratic Party and also a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome, Brian. These are our two Democrats on the panel. We also have two Republicans, and I'll introduce Senator Howard Stevenson, who is directly to my left. Senator Stevenson represents District 11, which is in the southern part of Salt Lake County. Senator Stevenson has been honored with numerous awards during his 23 years in office and serves on a number of committees, including the Senate Education Committee. He also is a member of the Republican Party and a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome, Senator Stevenson. And then the last member of our panel, but someone who's very well known in Davis County, Senator Todd Weiler represents District 23. He has parts of Davis County and Salt Lake County in his district. Senator Weiler serves on a number of committees, including the Business and Labor Committee, and is also an attorney by profession and a member of the Republican Party and a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Welcome, Senator Weiler. And I might mention that my name is Natalie Gochner, and I'm also a member of the LDS Church. And so we've got five Mormons up here on the panel, and we are going to bring you a discussion today about the intersection of LDS values and politics in the state of Utah. Should be an interesting discussion. And I want to start just by asking each of our panelists to just give us a little bit of a snapshot into their faith tradition, their faith background, just so we have a really good context for understanding where their perspectives come from. And let's just start with you, Senator Stevenson, and move down the row.
Thank you, Natalie.
So a little bit on your faith background.
Good, thank you. Oh, by the way, you shorted me 1 year at 24 years.
Okay, that's great.
My mother found herself without a husband when my dad decided that he didn't want any part of raising five kids. I was 8 years old, and my mother had to go back to school to finish her teaching certificate and then reared five children on her own. And if you would have seen any of her four boys, you would have understood why no man would want to marry her until she got us out of the home because of our behavior. And she was an amazing person. I learned what church service meant from her and also from those who served our family. It was interesting, I had a scoutmaster in Vernal, the first place she had a teaching job. And as I look back on what she did and what he did for us, for the four boys, it was just incredible. And bishops, stake presidents made sure that I had a job, that I was able to earn money for my mission and my siblings as well. And so the church really meant a lot to me, besides the fact that I felt from a very early age that it was true. The service that was rendered to my family is one of those things that I will never forget, and I want to keep repaying that as much as I can. My mother taught by example how we should live the gospel. She taught us to pray fervently as we went over Indian Canyon from Duchesne to Price to visit our grandparents during Christmas from driving from Vernal to Farron, where they lived. And the roads were so slick and snow-packed on this narrow dirt road, we learned to pray. And she, once my older brother obtained the Aaronic priesthood, she asked him to offer the prayer because he held the priesthood. And we learned faith from that. But I guess my example from her most of all was when we were living in Fredonia, Arizona. A very poor Mexican family moved in next door to us in a very small home. And my mother had always required us to do our own ironing, because you can understand, as a full-time teacher, she wasn't going to have time to do ironing for five children. So we all learned to do our own ironing. But suddenly, we found that she gave the ironing board and the iron to this Mexican lady next door, who they had very little means, and she was paying her to do our ironing. And I thought, wow, we have really arrived. This is great that I never have to iron again in my life. Well, when that family moved, my mother bought a new ironing board and an iron because she had given hers to them, and we returned to ironing. And it was only then that I understood that she wanted to help that family, even in her meager means at that time. And she did it out of the goodness of her heart, because she had compassion for them, and it taught me to have compassion too. And so that's my upbringing.
Great
and
examples.
That's how I was taught to be kind to other people.
Senator Wyler, you're welcome to take this wherever you want to, but I just want you to characterize sort of your faith tradition in terms of your background.
I grew up actually a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Northern Illinois. I was actually born in Georgia, and my mother was a fourth generation Mormon, all in South Carolina, and my father was in the Army and was stationed at Fort Jackson base in Columbia, South Carolina, and met my mother and joined the church only so she would marry him. I remember catching my father smoking when I was about 6 years old, and he had to stop smoking to baptize me and my brother. And he did baptize me, but he had our branch president do the confirmation because he wasn't comfortable using his Melchizedek priesthood at that time. So I grew up with a father who was a convert, and he actually did gain a very strong testimony of the church. And when he stopped smoking when I was six, he never started again, and was far from perfect, as am I, but I never questioned his testimony of the restored gospel. And so I gained my own testimony when I was in high school. I was challenged at a church class by my teacher to try to spend a half an hour on my knees in prayer, which sounds a lot easier than it is. And I'll just tell you real quickly, and that was the end of my sophomore year of high school, and I had just finished reading the Book of Mormon as part of my seminary program for the first time, and I decided I'd take that occasion to pray about the Book of Mormon, as is the challenge in the last chapter, the Moroni's challenge. And so I remember I knelt down, and I began praying. I put my clock in my bedroom so I could see it, and I got all ready for bed early. And I prayed for everything that I could think of. I prayed for the clouds and the rain and the birds and the trees, everything I could think of. The longest prayer of my life. I looked up, and like 1 minute had gone off the clock. And that was kind of frustrating for me. I was about 15 years old, and I was silent for a long time. And then, for the first time in my life, I really began to talk and to pour my heart out to my Father in heaven. And long story short, and without going into too many personal details, I prayed for much longer than a half an hour on that occasion. And when I stood up, I had a very strong testimony of the Book of Mormon.
Suzanne, same question.
So I grew up in Provo, and my dad was a professor at BYU, and my mom also spent some of her time working at Brigham Young as well. And we have a long history on both sides of my family of being active members of the LDS Church. And for me, because of my dad's job as a professor, we traveled as a child. And for me, my faith really came from that, in that no matter where I was in the world, no matter where my dad's job took us, I had a home when I went to church, and I had a community that was looking out for each other and trying to help each other along the way. And that is what has built my testimony, is the simple acts of service that I see throughout my life, throughout my neighborhood, throughout the world, and people trying to help each other out and look out for each other in the communities of following Christ that the church has provided for me.
Great. Representative King.
Much like Suzanne, my family has a long history on both sides of my mother and my father, church history. My middle name is Smith. Hiram Smith is my great-great-grandfather. The Lymans, who have a lot of history in the LDS Church, are on my father's side. And so it's sort of second nature in terms of my activity in the church. But when I was young, my parents weren't particularly active. They were sort of Jack Mormons. They're both Democrats, but they were wonderful human beings, and they had five sons. We all went to church, and three of my older brothers served missions. I served a mission. I'm the youngest of five. I remember, similar to Todd, praying about the Book of Mormon. Well, not praying, but reading the Book of Mormon. I was about 13 or 14, and having this recognition of the Holy Spirit just hit me that this is true. And I do love the Book of Mormon. I continue to read regularly in the scriptures, but particularly the Book of Mormon I have great fondness for. In terms of my faith tradition, I really feel strongly that Jesus Christ was an advocate for the dispossessed. He was in large part sent to earth to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. And we're far too comfortable, too much, in the state of Utah, in my judgment. And so for me personally, being a Democrat, the reason I'm a Democrat is because of the teachings of the restored gospel of Jesus Christ and the scriptures that I read. They dovetail so much better for me personally with what the Democratic Party stands for.
Okay, that's a great segue to where we're going next. We wanted to establish on the panel this faithful, devout sort of background of all four panelists. And then when we get into politics, it starts to go a little bit different. And Representative King has just made the comment that his religious background and beliefs align very well for him, or better for him, in the Democratic Party. Suzanne, can you elaborate on that as well? Why are you a Democrat? Just give answer that question, and then we'll ask the others that on the right.
My feelings are similar on that. I'm a Democrat because of my faith in Christ and because of my reading of the scriptures. I feel like we're taught to look out for those, the least of those, these among us, and look out for those that are struggling along the way and help lift them up. And I think that our church humanitarian system really is a strong example to the world and in my life of when people are in crisis or when people are struggling, give them a hand up for a short term and help them along the way.
Great. Let's go to you, Senator Wyler, and let's have you answer the question, why are you a Republican?
Well, let me start off with the story, and then I'll be more specific. So I remember in 1976 seeing a television commercial for Jimmy Carter, and I remember he was walking like outside in a park, and there's a lot of dead leaves, and he's walking the leaves, and I think he was talking about the environment. And I decided at the age of 9 that I liked Jimmy Carter. And when the night the elections came in, and that first Tuesday in November of 1976, I waited till my parents fell asleep, and I snuck downstairs in the basement, and I turned on the TV, and I watched the election returns come in until the TV station went off the air. And for those millennials in here, that used to happen. I was so pleased when he won. But then I grew up, and I became a Republican. And Ronald Reagan was elected, 4 years later. So I was about 13 years old, and he was president, during my transformative teenage years. But I'll tell you, there's two primary reasons why I'm a Republican. Number one, I believe in that every one of us should have equal opportunities in this country. But that is not the role of the government to try to artificially force equal outcomes. And I believe that the Republican Party best exemplifies this right to equal opportunities and not forced outcomes. Second of all, is the principle of self-reliance that I think is near and dear to my LDS faith. And that is, we teach a man to fish, or a woman, we don't just hand him a fish every day and make him dependent.
Senator Stevenson, bring us home on this question. Why are you a Republican?
When I was 13, Barry Goldwater and President Johnson were running against each other. And I remember watching on TV when we only had 3 stations, and in Fredonia it was very snowy reception. But there was this speech given by Ronald Reagan, a half-hour fundraiser that to this day is the biggest single fundraiser speech in the history of politics, wherein he described a time to choose. And the principles he described about government needing to get off our backs and out of our pockets, and the idea of liberty, of freedom, of the ability for every individual to choose for themselves what they should do with their resources, and that are, well, I watched that the first time, and then they replayed it on the various channels. I think I ended up watching it 3 or 4 times, and each time I just was amazed at how profound that message was, and that has stuck with me ever since. And I knew then that I was a Republican and that I believed in those principles. And then when I was elected, then Representative and later Senator Bill Wright gave me a speech by Ezra Taft Benson called The Proper Role of Government. And he also gave me a piece by Davy Crockett on Not Yours to Give. And it really described how we do need to be compassionate as individuals, but when government forces that compassion, and the greater the distance between the giver and the receiver, the more the receiver deems it an entitlement. I just feel strongly that those are important Republican principles that conform with the gospel of Jesus Christ.
And that was Utah State Senator Howard Stevenson. He joined other lawmakers or candidates for office in talking about their own personal faiths in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The forum was recorded last week at the Hinckley Institute of Politics and presented by Alliance for a Better Utah. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. On this program, as you know, we record and broadcast the many engaging lectures, debates, and panel discussions held at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, and we replay them, unedited, mostly in their entirety, as a public service. Today we're airing a forum recorded last week about the balancing act that many Utah public officials, that's both Democrats and Republicans, must make between politics and their elected duties to their constituents and their faith in the LDS Church. The panelists include Democratic Representative Brian King of House District 28, Democratic candidate for the House in Utah's 32nd District, Suzanne Harrison, Republican Senator Todd Weiler of Senate District 23, and Republican Senator Howard Stevenson of Senate District 11. All the panelists are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, including the moderator, Natalie Gochner. She's Associate Dean of the David Eccles School of Business and the Director of the University of Utah's Kem C. Gardner Policy Institute. Here's Natalie.
Very good. I think that we've now established that we have four panelists with a faithful LDS background and four panelists who interpret their faith in the political square differently. I want to read to you from the LDS newsroom. This is the statement on political neutrality. And we want to just talk about that for a minute. So it says here, the church's mission is to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, not to elect politicians. The church is neutral in matters of party politics. I'm going to streamline just a little bit. The church does not endorse, promote, or oppose political parties, candidates, or platforms. The church does not allow its church buildings, membership lists, or other resources to be used for partisan political purposes. The church does not attempt to direct its members as to which candidate or party they should give their votes to. The church does not attempt to direct or dictate to a government leader. There's more here, but that's a good start. Representative King, you are the minority leader on Capitol Hill. I want you to just tell us about how this policy of political neutrality plays out in a real-life setting on Capitol Hill. Seems like you might have some insights there.
Well, thank you for that question. I love this statement of political neutrality, and I have spoken to members of the highest levels of the church about it at times in the past and thanked them for it. And we have an opportunity to, as members of the leadership team on both the Republican and the Democratic side of the aisle, to get together with them on a regular basis each year after the session. They are kind enough to invite us down to church headquarters and have a little lunch. And the leadership, yeah. So you just have the leadership members of the House and the Senate, both Democrats and Republicans, and the Democrats meet separately from the Republicans.
Do they film those?
They do not film.
Just kidding.
There's not really much discussed other than thank you for your service. But when I was talking with one of the members of the 12 about this, I said, thank you for your letters that you have read over the pulpit. And he said, well, I hope you notice we've tried to increase the strength of them incrementally over time. And I said, I do appreciate that. I'll tell you my concern about political neutrality, though, Elder. And I won't tell you who I was speaking with, but it was one of the members of the 12. And I said, when the Salt Lake Tribune in November of 2012, after the election, reports that 11 of the top 15 leaders of the church are registered Republicans, the other four are unaffiliated, and there are no registered Democrats. And when the Salt Lake Tribune reports again 2 years later in November of 2014 that 9 of the top 15 leaders of the church are registered Democrats and, I'm sorry, registered Republicans.
Wishful thinking.
And 6 of them are registered, are not registered at all, and there are no registered Democrats. Your actions speak louder than your words. And this individual, who I love and respect and sustain, just look down, and because he recognized the truth of that. And mm-hmm. And so that's the challenge, I think, that we sometimes have as Democrats here in the state of Utah, is that the diversity of political membership and affiliation that political neutrality statement would suggest exists or should exist doesn't really exist to the same degree among the leaders of the church, and that's a challenge at times to deal with. So it plays out in various ways up on the Hill. And but I will say this, to the credit of the leaders of the church, I've never had a leader of the church contact me and dictate or even suggest to me how I should vote on any particular issue that we've dealt with up at the Capitol. Of course, the LDS Church is a significant player in many respects here in the state of Utah. Most of the citizens of the state of Utah affiliate, call themselves, self-identify as LDS. And so to think that there would not be some degree of influence, either subtle or, I hope it would be more subtle than direct, and my experience has been that it has been more subtle than direct, to think that that's not going to exist is just naive. It does exist. But it doesn't play itself out, in my experience, in a very direct way.
Yeah. Suzanne, we're going to come back to you and ask what it's like to be a candidate, but I wanted to give a chance to the two senators to comment on how they see church influence playing out on Capitol Hill. Very briefly, Todd.
Sure. I have been a state senator for 5 sessions, and I can count on both of my hands, almost on one hand, how many times in those 5 sessions I've been contacted by the church's public affairs division. And again, like Brian, I've never been contacted by my bishop or my stake president for any political, matters. But in my experience, the church is hands-off on about 99% of the bills that we handle, but there's certain areas where they take an interest. One, which will be no surprise to you, is liquor laws. So I sit on the Business and Labor Committee, and so all of the liquor legislation that's proposed, whether it's passed or not, comes through the Senate Business and Labor Committee. Number two, they have a vested interest in laws regarding gambling, and I was contacted by the church when we had a bill about cockfighting, of all things. And number three, they've had a vested interest, and they have somewhat divested themselves out of this area, but I have been contacted by the church when it comes to adoption laws, and that's just about it. I think the church was very transparent in its support of the LGBT anti-discrimination bill in 2015, and they were very transparent, I think, in their support against medical marijuana this year, but I wasn't individually contacted, I don't believe, on either one of those bills. And so I like to tell people, and I don't think they're contacting me because I'm LDS, but the LDS Church, whether you're a member or not, they are a large employer in Utah, and they're a large property owner and business owner, and they own City Creek, if you didn't know that, and the Deseret News and KSL. And so for anyone to suggest that an influence in the state where there's a large amount of employees affected by the laws we pass and a large amount of business interests and property affected, that they should be silenced, that they should be muted, that they shouldn't ever have a voice in what we're doing, I think that would be mistaken. But the LDS Church is one of many stakeholders in the state, and I try to listen to all of them. And I've never said, well, I was going to vote this way, but now I'm going to vote that way, because I've never been told how to vote, like Brian said. I've been told this is our position, and this is why we're for it or against it. And so that's very common.
Senator Stevenson, can you briefly give your quick take on that?
Yeah, and again, I've only been contacted by the church's public affairs people, never by a general authority, never by a church leader in my local area.
I've had the same experience, so there hasn't been any undue influence by church members or by the public affairs representatives. But I do want to tell 2 experiences I've had that are maybe insightful. Senator Polton and I, when he was in the Senate, there was a position by the church that was announced that there are no guns in the churches. And so we took it upon ourselves to see if we could have a meeting with the then president of the Utah area. He comes from Canada, Alexander B. Morrison, and he was kind enough to give us audience. And we thought we would just show the logical explanation of how, when you say we will have no guns here, that means that nefarious people have an announcement that we promise not to shoot back. And it was interesting that that conversation was very cordial. He listened, but was not moved by our arguments. And we left a little bit disappointed that our rational argument was not heard. And then a few weeks later, during General Conference, Elder Morrison gave one of the greatest testimonies of the Savior's atonement that I have ever heard in General Conference. And I found myself weeping throughout his sermon and just realized that the Lord is in charge and that he knows his servants. And I was just so moved by that sermon, and I go back to it time and time again. Another time, I was experiencing some really difficult time in the public eye with extremely negative press that just seemed to be relentless. It was the first day of the session, and Elder James E. Faust, a Democrat, was giving the opening prayer of the session on the Senate floor. And I went up to greet him, and somehow just there was nobody but he and I nearby within earshot. It was really unusual because usually there's a lot of people around. And he said to me, "We want you to know." And then he gave me these amazing words of solace that just melted my heart. And I didn't know that he even knew who I was, because I have never run for leadership, so I've never been a part of those meetings of leadership with the church authorities. But when he said those words of solace to me that were unsolicited, I just knew that the Lord cares about me as an individual, and he knew what I was going through. And I was so appreciative that those words came from somebody whose sermons I always listened to so carefully. I was so grateful for his sensitivity toward me. So it's interesting how we in political parties want to say that we have a big tent. We want to be inclusive as much as we can. We, in part because we win elections better that way. But one thing that has struck me as I have served in the legislature in particular is that no matter how big we try to make our political tents, the Lord's tent is infinitely large and is infinitely inclusive. And even though we in our parties may want to say, well, that person certainly can't be included in the church. And when I hear of Bishop Briscoe and what he's doing in his ward. And one of my dear friends is a Democrat from the House, Dan Tuttle, who served for many years in the House. And he kind of adopted me as somebody that he would mentor and say, you need to be not so serious all the time. And he really is to this day an amazing mentor. And I don't think many people on the Hill understood until his wife Marcia passed away from cancer and they attended the funeral that he and his wife, all of their children, have been married in the temple. And yet I would imagine that most people never knew that this Democrat from Magna was even a Mormon.
You're listening to the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. We'll be right back. This is the Hinckley Institute Radio Hour on KCPW. I'm Ross Chambliss. Today we're airing a panel discussion recorded recently at the Hinckley Institute of Politics about the intersection of politics and LDS Church values in the state of Utah, specifically how Utah state legislators balance their faith with politics and their elected duties. The event was presented by Alliance for a Better Utah. The panelists include Democratic Representative Brian King, Democratic candidate for the House Suzanne Harrison, Republican Senator Todd Weiler, Republican Senator Howard Stevenson, and the moderator is Natalie Gochner, the Associate Dean of the David Eccles School of Business and the Director of the University of Utah's Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute.
I want to just make the observation that it's highly unusual, even in this state, to have a discussion about LDS values and politics like we're hearing today. And I want to thank the Hinckley Institute and the Alliance for Better Utah Education Fund for helping to make that happen. Suzanne, you are a candidate, which means you're out knocking on doors and picking what you put on brochures, getting to know people. I wanted you to just reflect for a minute what it's like, given what we've just heard, to be an LDS Democrat out on the stump.
It's actually been a lot of fun, and I should add, I'm very much a moderate. Okay. I'm a middle-of-the-road mom and a doctor that got into this because of the 29 children in my daughter's kindergarten class. And my campaign manager is a lifelong, very conservative Republican, and we're interested in middle-of-the-road, reasonable solutions to the real problems in this state. And I think we are chronically under-supporting public education, and I think the great equalizer in opportunity is making sure every child in this state has a great education. We can't expect self-reliance if your quality of your education depends on which side of the tracks you're born and on and how great your teacher happens to be in your classroom. We've got to equalize the opportunities for the children in this state, and that's why I'm doing this. And as a doctor, I'm doing this because of air quality, and the medical evidence is overwhelming, and my neighbors and friends in my neighborhood are overwhelmingly LDS, and a lot of them are registered Republicans, but air quality isn't a partisan issue. It's a health issue. It's a family issue. And I think people are ready for people to address middle-of-the-road common problems that everyone is facing in this state and find real solutions without partisan bickering and with common sense, and that's what I hope to do, and that's why I got into this.
Very good. I want to just wrap up this little part by reading just a couple more statements from this statement on political neutrality. And it kind of reflected in the dialogue here. It says, the church does expect its members to engage in the political process in an informed and civil manner, respecting the fact that members of the church come from a variety of backgrounds and experiences and may have differences of opinion in partisan political matters. Then it goes on to say, elected officials who are Latter-day Saints make their own decisions and may not necessarily be in agreement with one another or even with a publicly stated church position. And then it goes on to say, the church recognizes that officials must make their own choices based on their best judgment and with consideration of the constituencies whom they were elected to represent. Interesting. So with that as just a little bit more background, I want to ask a tough question to the Democrats, and then we'll get the Republicans to respond. But it seems to any observer that we may not have enough competitive political discourse in this state because we have such a dominance of the Republican Party. And without that competition, we don't have as many debates, we don't hear as many ideas. Maybe it leads to more excess, abuse, complacency. I mean, you can think of a lot of things that a super strong majority could cause in terms of some difficulty. And I thought it'd be good for the Democrats very quickly to just reflect upon what it's like to be a Democrat in Utah. And then I'd like the Republicans to give us an idea of why it's okay that we don't have more competition.
That's a great question. And here's the thing that is a challenge from my perspective as much as anything. I think that there is a significant divide between what culture exists here in the state of Utah in terms of politics and religion versus religious teaching. For example, one of the things that that's always puzzled me is abortion is an issue, for example, that I think illustrates this divide between the policies of the LDS Church and the positions that people within the LDS Church take. You've got conservatives who believe that life begins at conception and all abortion should be criminalized. The National Republican Party platform basically says that. That is not in keeping with LDS Church policy. LDS Church policy is very clear in saying that while abortion should not occur in the context of just selfish decisions and it should not be used as a method of birth control, that is immoral, that is squarely against church teachings and will bring about church discipline in some situations. Nevertheless, that abortion, when you're talking about the health of the mother, or when you're talking about rape or incest, or when you're talking about even fatal fetal abnormalities, is something that is not something that should be illegal, that those things are permitted and maybe even appropriate and necessary in some circumstances, and there are decisions that should be made between doctors and couples, and involving prayerful decision making with God and church leaders, but that they should not be made illegal. Nevertheless, you find, I think, many, if not most, active LDS people saying, we believe that the Republican Party position on abortion is more consistent with LDS church doctrine or LDS church policy, just not accurate. So, from my perspective, the struggle and the frustration that I sometimes have to deal with up at the legislature is that discordance, that discrepancy between what LDS church policy or doctrine says and what people who are active within the LDS church believe about that particular issue.
Yeah, very interesting. You want to add anything there, Suzanne?
Yeah, I come at this from policy decisions, and I believe that the more varied voices and backgrounds that are at the table when policy is getting thought about and decided, the stronger and better the policy will be. And it, in this state, it's a fact that we have a supermajority of Republican voices in the legislature, and I think it would be better for our state and produce better policy if we had people with different backgrounds and different political viewpoints at the table helping make decisions. And I support open door caucus meetings and transparency, and I think people with different backgrounds, I'm a mom, I'm a doctor, there's lots of people in this state with various backgrounds that I think could add to better policy being made in the legislature.
It's great. We'll ask our Republicans to defend why there should be even more Republicans or whatever it might be, but as you start that, Senator Wyler, we're going to, after this, turn to you for questions, and we have Mitchell here with a microphone. You can hold that up, Mitchell. We want to make sure you wait till the microphone comes, and then you can ask the question, and we'll take it from there. Senator Wyler.
Thanks. We have 104 state legislators in Utah. There's 29 senators, 75 House members. Of those, five senators are Democrats, and 12 House members are Democrats. You have 17 out of 104. Some would say that's too many, but here's my point. When you have a supermajority, and so the Republicans have around 85% of both the House and the Senate, it might be 86%, you don't have 86% of the people all thinking exactly the same. And I was vice chair of the Utah Republican Party from 2007 to 2009, and I did a lot of media interviews kind of defending the party. And one common question I got was about Utah being a one-party state, since we held and we still hold most of the statewide offices. And my canned response, kind of tongue-in-cheek, was, we can't be a one-party state because we have at least three parties just in the Republican Party. And what I meant by that, I think, was really kind of illustrated in my own race for re-election this year. I have a Democratic opponent that will be on the ballot, opposed to me next month. But I also had a fellow Republican file against me. And if you would have listened to her rhetoric, if you would have attended our debate, you would have thought we were from different parties, because she was running kind of like Gary Johnson and Gary Johnson and Governor Herbert. Jonathan Johnson. Sorry. So Jonathan Johnson, if you followed that race last spring, my opponent was kind of closely aligned with Jonathan Johnson. In fact, he gave her $1,000 to help her defeat me, to no avail. But I'm much more aligned with Gary Herbert. But to listen to those two, I mean, Jonathan Johnson was saying that Governor Herbert wasn't doing enough quickly enough on federal lands. I've received three mailers in my mailbox this week from Michael Weinholz saying that Gary Herbert's gone way too far on federal lands. And so, even within, my point is, even within the Republican Party, we have different camps of ideology. And so I do think, even though we're 85-86% Republican, we are having a lot of those vibrant debates just because there's different kind of caucuses within the Republican Party, plus our Democratic friends. And they don't all have the same views on everything either.
Senator Stevenson, enough competition for the Republican Party in this state?
I remember as a kid when the House and the Senate was dominated by Democrats. In fact, when I started with the Taxpayers Association as a young intern, Moroni Jensen, a Democrat, was the president of the Senate. And so these things ebb and flow over time. And I suppose we may be Democrat in 30 years from now. Who knows? Majority in each house. But I agree with Todd that there's enough diversity in both houses and both parties that we have very strong debates on issues even within a party. So I believe, though, that there must needs be opposition in all things. Else righteousness cannot be brought to pass, and we need that healthy opposition, a yin and a yang, in order for there to be, as the scripture said, a compound in one. It's unique to have those words, a compound in one, in scripture, but that's what it says, and I think there's some strong value to that, and we need that healthy opposition in all things that we debate up there.
Great. Let's go to the question answers. We got some things, and I can see I'm trying to go to students first, if I can. Let's go right over here, and then we'll come to some of the others. But we're going to try and get our students to hit us with some questions.
If you could just say your name and then something about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Joel Gardner. I'm a political science and psychology major. I'm a sixth-generation Mormon. Got back from my mission a year ago. So my question is, I'm kind of in the Gary Johnson, Jonathan Johnson camp, more the liberty side of the Republican Party. And so when the church came out against the legalization of medical marijuana, I was for that bill. So I just wonder, when the church comes out against a bill that you support or vice versa, how do you overcome that dissonance that I'm sure you felt before, that I felt? What advice would you have, or what do you usually do?
Let's go to our panelists here. Who wants to take that on?
That's a very good question, and I'm more of your political leaning as well. I believe in liberty and individual opportunity and agency, and I think that is what that suggests. I have to say that when the church does have a position like that, with me, I always consider it, but I don't vote carte blanche because of it. And in fact, I would vote for medical marijuana today, regardless of the church's position, because I believe that Nixon's war on drugs, among many things that Nixon did, that was one of the worst, because it has failed. It has resulted in many, many lost lives of innocent people through no-knock searches and all kinds of things. It has been an unmitigated disaster. Even the drug enforcement folks say that they haven't interdicted more than 10% of the drugs, and I would suggest it's probably more like one-tenth of that. And yet we continue to go down this road of trying to be a nanny state and telling people what they can and cannot do.
So, Senator, it feels like the way you handle the dissonance is by voting your conscience.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I feel good about that. I don't have that dissonance.
Yeah. Representative King, do you want to add something?
Just that I think that Howard's right about that. I've had circumstances where I thought, you know, I know how the folks in my district feel. It's interesting, if you ask the people here on the panel what percentage of their districts are LDS and which ones what aren't, I will be so bold as to suggest to you, and Howard and Todd can tell me if I'm wrong, and Suzanne can too, For both Howard and Todd, they live in areas that are predominantly LDS. I'd guess it's 75-80% LDS, something like that in that range. Suzanne, maybe a little less so, but still predominantly LDS. For me, probably about 40% of my district is LDS and 60% is not. And I take that into account. I think that's an important thing when you're representing the people in your district, whether it's a Senate or a House district. You better be thinking about how they would like you to represent them to accurately. And so from my perspective, I have to really subordinate the position that the LDS Church may take on a particular issue. And to the extent that it accords with the feelings of the people in my district and my own personal feelings in terms of what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, great. To the extent it doesn't, it's a subordinate issue. And on medical marijuana, I'm with Howard and I'm with you. You know, I think that this is a medical and a science issue. We ought to be taking the best information we get from doctors about whether medical marijuana has a place. And everything that I read and see suggests that it does. And so I think that it ought to be legal for some purposes. Now, the devil's in the details and how you regulate it and all that kind of stuff is something that reasonable minds can disagree about. But I if a bill comes along that allows me to, from a medical and from a scientific and from a rational fact perspective, vote for it, not just on medical marijuana, but on anything, I'm going to vote for that. And if something comes along that's a bad idea from those same perspectives, I'm going to vote against it. And you know, the church, the LDS Church, or any other church may take a position on a particular issue, and I think, okay, that's subordinate to these other facts and issues.
That's great. Let's queue up the next question, but I want to hear from you, Senator Wyler. But who is there a student that wants to go next? Let's come over here. And then, Senator Wyler, as we set that up, you go ahead and bring us home there.
I had to really struggle to think of, I think most of the issues that the church has been publicly weighing in on, immigration, LGBT, non-discrimination, and others, most of them I had independently arrived at the same, at my conclusion before the church went public, and we happen to be on the same side. But I have identified two, and one is Zion's Curtain, on that one, I tend to think that the law is needs to be replaced for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that it only applies to new restaurants that have opened since the law passed. And so the situation in Salt Lake right now is over 90% of the restaurants that serve liquor are not subject to the Zion's Curtain, but just the new restaurants are, and there's added expense and less floor space for them. That's one of my primary oppositions. But as I've talked to the Public Affairs Department about our liquor laws, I do find myself in harmony with their overall objective, and that is that restaurants should be restaurants, and that bars should be bars, and that the two should not be combined into one. And I think that the churches, as I understand the church's position, they want families to be able to go out and have dinner without having dinner in a bar. And so I do find myself in agreement with that principle. I just am not sure the Zion's Curtain. Most people don't know this, but we cut and paste that. I wasn't in the legislature when it happened. It was before my time. That law, word for word, from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And most people are shocked and don't believe me when I tell them that, but that's exactly where it came from. It's Wyoming's liquor law, and it's not called Zion's Curtain there. It's just called Zion's Curtain here because of the Mormon influence in Salt Lake City. Also, a medical marijuana, I kind of led the opposition in the Senate in 2015, and then I started surveying my mostly Mormon constituents who, in every survey I've done, have said, we do want medical marijuana. And so for me, it's not just yes or no on medical marijuana, it's how. And so in 2016, this year, I worked with the Senate sponsor, and he made some significant amendments to the bill, which allowed me to support it this year, even though the church had come out. They did lessen their opposition on that one. So for me, but if I could, Natalie, really quickly, more interesting for me is to see how other people react when the church is against their position. Mm-hmm. And we have some very vocal activists who are not necessarily paid lobbyists, but they're at the legislature every day. And I, with the anti-discrimination bill in 2015, which is one of my proudest accomplishments, I didn't run the bill, but just that I got to vote for it. I literally had members of the church who I knew telling me that it was only two of the apostles who had supported that legislation, so it wasn't a majority, and that the prophet obviously was, you know, suffering from health effects and didn't realize what these two apostles were doing. Literally, I had people cornering me and telling me that the brethren had were leading us astray and that this was the wrong thing to do. And of course, I didn't buy into this for a second, but for me, it's been more interesting to see how other people try to justify their political beliefs.
Yeah, and use
when
the
they
church.
Are in contra. Yeah, because yeah. A lot of these people kind of drape themselves in kind of church cloaks when they come to see us, and so it's an awkward position when the church is against them.
Great. Let's go to the question over here.
I'm Zoe McGinn. I'm actually a BYU student.
Great. We welcome you.
Thank you. I'm also an intern for the Salt Lake Tribune this semester, and I was wondering, I know there were videos leaked yesterday of the apostles talking about some of these issues. And one of the things that was said was a former senator, Gordon Smith from Oregon, talked about how valuable it was for the church to have active Mormons in D.C. And I was wondering just kind of to what extent you agree or disagree with that, and also on the state level as, you know, as Mormons in the state legislature.
Yeah. Who wants to tackle that?
Nobody's jumping. First of all, I want to clarify, I have not watched the videos, but I have read the Salt Lake Tribune and other people's accounts. And what I believe that what former U.S. Senator Gordon Smith said was, it was important, he felt, and he was speaking to the brethren, the general authorities, the apostles, and he said he thought it was good for the church to have elected officials who valued their temple recommend more than their election certificate. My first reaction was that I never got an election certificate that I could think of. But second of all, I think his point is, well, maybe we did. I think his point is that it's good. I was listening to X96 this morning, and Bill Elred and some others were going off on that particular statement. And I don't know that I'm as offended by that. Maybe it's because I'm LDS and I'm biased. But here's what I know. I was with my some members of my family up in by the Martins Cove area, and there's a lot of LDS youth groups that go on treks up there, and they pull their hand carts, and I participated in one of those, and it was a marvelous experience. But those are all federal BLM lands, and sometimes the church has to. You know, Washington, D.C. is a place that is an interesting environment. So if you go in with no political clout and you say, we'd like to run hundreds of young 15 and 16-year-olds through these lands on a constant basis all summer, they might say no. So if you have someone in power like Orrin Hatch or other people, sometimes it's easier to get to the right people and get an audience. Also, just recently, BYU wanted to acquire the property around the Y on that mountain, and I think they worked through Congressman Jason Chaffetz to allow that to happen. Neither of those were unrighteous purposes. But again, I think his assessment is correct. I think now that it's gone public, he probably wishes he rewarded it. But I think it is good for the church to have some people that are connected in D.C. so that when they have a legitimate federal interest, they have someone who can connect them to the right audience.
Brian, you look like you have to add something else there.
I do have something to add. I sometimes wonder if we don't overestimate the importance of having an individual who is a member of the LDS Church in a particular political position or an elected position. You know, the Doctrine and Covenants, in preparing for this, I remembered this scripture from the Doctrine and Covenants that says, it's 98 verse 10, section 98 verse 10. Wherefore, honest men and wise men and women, of course, should be sought for diligently, and good men and wise men and women ye should observe to uphold, otherwise whatsoever is less than these cometh of evil. I think that there are many, many virtuous, wise, honest individuals outside the LDS Church who I'd vote for in a second over an LDS candidate on the other side of the aisle, regardless of party, who I just don't think has the wisdom or the judgment or the integrity that a non-LDS person has. And I worry that we get too hung up on labels, quite honestly. And I think that when you talk about the gospel of Jesus Christ, it's a circle, unless you're watching it here live or on video, I'm drawing a big circle. The Republican Party is a small circle within the big circle. The Democratic Party is a small circle within the big circle. And there are many, many people, and the LDS Church is a smaller circle than the big Gospel of Jesus Christ circle. And so I worry that we're tribal in our thinking way too often. We have a tendency to us versus them. We have a tendency to demonize people on the other side of organizations or political parties or positions in a way that I worry about and I'm troubled by. So when you say, is it important for people who are LDS to be elected? What's important is good men and women all across the spectrum to get elected. It's true that we bring as LDS people our own unique perspective on stuff. For example, immigration, refugees. I come from, you know, my great-great-grandmother walked across the plains alone because her husband was killed because of his religious beliefs. I get it. And that resonates for me. And I think it's important that we vote on those issues in line with what those experiences and values are. So again, another reason that, especially in this year's election, I'm voting Democratic.
Senator Wyler wants to say something briefly.
Just a quick retort, and that is that statement from Gordon Smith was specifically in the context of congressmen and women being able to connect with foreign officials, I think specifically to get missionaries in and out of the countries. And I do think that that is, other than the federal land examples where I was giving earlier, you know, you might want someone who has a temple recommend or at least has served a mission for the LDS Church. There's going to be a different level of understanding and appreciation of what that means to the church than maybe a non-member who is a person of good rapport and integrity. And I agree with Brian on what he said, but I can understand how when we're dealing with over 150 countries throughout the world to get LDS missionaries in and out of there, and right now we're having problems in Russia, and it's a constant struggle as laws change and things. I do appreciate, and I tend to agree with what Senator Smith, Gordon Smith was saying, and that it is helpful to have that connection when you're trying to grease those wheels, if you will. And I say that in the most righteous, legitimate way as I can.
Yeah, that's great. We've got a lot more questions here. Let's go right over here. We've got about 10 more minutes or so on our panel discussion here, so let's try and get as many of these questions as we can and go rapid fire on our responses.
Great. I'm Drew Clark. I'm a telecom attorney, and I'm also a consultant to the Gary Johnson for President campaign. And Natalie, I really applaud you for this great panel, really, really rich discussion, and for the Alliance for Better Utah. My question for the panelists is really about whether we're going to see changes between the state parties and the national parties. Again, it's unforeseeable what will happen in this election with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, but do you see the Utah Republican Party or the Utah Democratic Party really trying to distinguish themselves more and more from their national parties, particularly as represented by Mr. Trump and Mrs. Clinton?
That's great. Who wants to tackle that?
I think that's a real possibility. I talk to a lot of Republicans in Utah who are embarrassed by our nominee. And in fact, in Utah, he finished third. And I think if there's any state that Gary Johnson has a chance of carrying a plurality in, it is this one. But I think that his low rating here, I don't think it had a lot to do with Mitt Romney's opinion. I think it was because we saw his character and it was lacking. We want some adult supervision of him in the White House if he does win. And I think that Mike Pence has shown himself not to be the one to provide that. If he would challenge Donald Trump on his misstatements and his embarrassing things that he said publicly, and if Donald Trump were to acknowledge that and say, I'm sorry, I think Trump would have a huge advantage knowing that there was adult supervision. But he doesn't reflect Utah values, I don't believe.
Yeah, Suzanne, I want to hear your response there.
I just hope people realize that if
if there ever were a year for people to put aside their assumptions about party labels and what it means to be in whichever party, this is the year to do it. Because as a mom of a daughter, I feel like Donald Trump and how he speaks about women and people that are different to him is concerning. And it goes against everything in my belief system of what I'm trying to teach my children about how to treat others and how to respect others. And also as a member of the LDS Church, with religious liberty being an important issue, his rhetoric about banning people from entering our great land simply because of their religious beliefs and banning an entire group of Muslim folks from entering here simply because of their religion goes against everything that's sacred to me as a lifelong member of the church and as a proud member of a church that at one point had an extermination order against it and was driven from state to state. And I'm concerned that this kind of rhetoric hasn't been more publicly denounced by folks here.
Yeah, very good. Let's go to another question. Mitchell, let's go quick on these.
I've never seen so much divisiveness, you know, in my life as far as, you know, current to local politics is concerned. In fact, you know, that they're not even allowing us to vote in the schools at this point. You know, that they've taken the privilege of being to vote in the schools. And so I'm wondering if we're concerned that we're not going to be able to see our children have the right learning as far as the democratic processes are concerned, because we're not talking about it, or we just don't like the political spectrum that's going on today.
That's great. Representative King.
I'd just say about that, that's... George, Sherry Swenson came out, I think, at the Salt Lake County Clerk's level and said, we're not going to have polling places in the schools, primarily out of a public safety concern. So I don't think it's that we don't want to teach our kids the right thing. Obviously, we do want to teach our kids the right thing, and you still have an opportunity, and it's an opportunity that I take advantage of the opportunity to bring my kids with me when we go vote on election day. That's a fun thing to do, and I think it's an important thing. So the concern was that we don't want to have a large amount of people coming into our schools when they may be bringing guns or having guns with them, and that's the public.
Let's go to the next question. It's right here. And then we're going to go over to this side, Mitchell, afterwards. Mr. Irvine, next. Okay.
My name is Becky Heiss. I'm unaffiliated. I'm LDS, and I'm definitely left-leaning. I just wanted to give you some feedback and maybe have your response. When you started out, you kind of, I know you were joking, but you said, you know, I really like Jimmy Carter, but then I grew up. And as someone who is left-leaning, and I don't feel my voice is heard in Utah at all. I mean, I really, once my husband works for the church and once he retires, I'd like to leave because I don't feel like my voice is really represented here or listened to. And even though that was a joke, you know, that question about, you know, having the majority, how is that good, how is that bad? I feel when I read the paper during the legislative session, when I read things that people say, I feel there is a certain amount of arrogance in the majority. When you have a majority, that's a real risk. And there are times where I feel very disrespected, even though I know that wasn't your intent and you were just kidding around. I feel like there's this kind of attitude that is there, that kind of, we're the ones who are really smart here, we're the majority, we know what's going on. And it kind of pushes away people with different views and ideas. So I just would like your response to that feedback.
You're up, Senator Wyler.
Yeah, real quick. First of all, I was joking. I'm sorry if I offended you. Second of all, you know, some of my colleagues, when Jim DeBacchus joined the Senate, some of my colleagues were less than thrilled. And I said, and I continue to say, this is wonderful. There are a lot of people in the state, especially in his district, who finally feel like they have someone who's articulating their views. And I cherish that process. But number three, and this is my overall response, Howard and I didn't decide that we'd be in the majority. There are elections every 2 years. I have a Democratic opponent. Do you? I mean, he's not ready. He's up in two more years. So we have four-year terms. But I had a Democratic opponent 4 years ago. I have a Democratic opponent next month. And so it's the voters. It's the voters who are showing up that are giving us the majority. And in terms of arrogance in politics, you are correct. Politicians are arrogant. And
And I think we all know that, and that's bipartisan. There's arrogance on both sides of the aisle in Utah and in D.C., and I think that's something that we all need to fight, and I pray to be more humble, and I'll continue to do that.
Thank you, Senator. Let's go to Mr. Irvine here.
David Irvine, and I want to take advantage of an opportunity at this LDS Values Forum to all of you as a microcosm of the state legislature, which is really an extended LDS high priest group, to tilt more toward one LDS value that would do this state a world of good, at least in my opinion. LDS scripture is shot through and through with an injunction to those who are in leadership positions in civil government to do their business by the voice of the people. And that shows up again and again, and I believe in that. Yet, the voice of the people in Utah is pretty severely circumscribed by my party, the Republican Party, having gerrymandered the daylights out of the process. And the only way the voice of the people, in my view, humbly, is ever going to mean anything is if legislative reapportionment is done in a manner, whether it's by the legislature or recommendations from a citizen commission, when legislators who approve those final boundary maps are wearing, if I might be so bold as to suggest, that church hat, looking carefully at governing by the voice of the people rather than by the partisan hat that says we want everything we've got plus a handful more. And I really would be interested in your response to that. Thanks.
So this is a comment about having more of an independent redistricting process so that this supermajority that exists here doesn't just perpetuate itself and that you have more involvement that creates more competition in politics. Looks like the Democrats want to jump on this one.
Well, I think the Democrats agree with you, David. without much question. Let me say this. The state constitution vests in the legislature the right and the obligation to redistrict. Now, you're not going to see the legislature, as a practical matter, give that up to an independent commission. Politically, they're just not going to do it. However, what we could do by citizen initiative, if not by legislative action, is set up an independent bipartisan commission to make recommendations to the legislature about redistricting in a way that would make it more politically unpalatable for the legislature to reject those kind of recommendations. I'd like to see that happen. I think that's feasible. I think it could happen. It's not very politically likely, but I think it could happen by virtue of our own action in passing a statute. I think more politically likely is that it could happen by virtue of an initiative.
Senator Stevenson, you're the senior senator up here. Give us a quick reaction to that, and then maybe let's just do one more question.
I've never sought to be on the redistricting committee, nor in rules. I can't even relate to the issue. I was elected in a very gerrymandered district that shouldn't have given me any advantage at all the first time, and I see Democrats successfully winning in those marginal districts that were put slightly more Republican, and Democrats successfully win. I think the Utah voters are so independent that they look at the character and the beliefs of the candidate instead of the party more than we think. And I think that despite efforts to gerrymander, the people end up making that decision. I think they've done a great job of doing that. And I think it's reflected in our rankings nationally in so many ways where we're in the top 10 or number one. But at the same time, there needs to be opposition in all things, and I welcome anything that would bring more balance there.
Yeah, Senator, some would say that because of your point that this would be acceptable to Republicans. If Utah voters are that independent, that you don't need to do this gerrymandering.
Let me just weigh in for a second. There's no such thing as an unbiased person. If you say you're unbiased, either you're lying
or you're completely misinformed and you just don't care about anything, you never read a paper. But here's my take, and I joined the legislature just after the latest redistricting. Right now, we have elected officials who are accountable to the public in the sense that they're up for re-election every 2 to 4 years. If you strip that authority away, change our state constitution and our federal constitution, and give that to this quote-unquote independent panel, you're going to give it to people who are not accountable to the public and who most certainly have biases. They may say they don't. They may say that they'll check them at the door, but they absolutely do. And I'm okay with a system where, yes, we have biases, and if you don't like what we do, you can vote us out of office.
Very good. Last question at the back here.
My name is Ryan Hadfield. I'm a student here at the University of Utah. I have a question specifically for the Democrat representatives and candidate. You talked a little bit about the lack of representation within the leadership of the LDS Church for your party. I just wanted to quickly ask, why do you think that is? Are there specific policies or principles from the church that are more easily justifiable for Republican ideals? And what ideas and policies do you feel, I don't want to say justify, but help you keep that affiliation with the church and also, you know, that align well with your religious beliefs and practices? In addition to that, how do you face that somewhat, I guess you would say, bias within the church community being, for lack of a better word, the minority?
How much time do I have? No. Well, it's a great question. Let me answer first why I think that is true at the highest levels of the church, that you have this political affiliation the way it is. In large part, I think it is a function of where the leadership of the church, the LDS Church, is drawn from. It's drawn from older men. And these are individuals who come, when you look at their backgrounds, I believe they're called of God, but I also believe that it would be naive not to recognize that they're predominantly coming from business backgrounds, legal backgrounds, they're coming from corporate backgrounds. The pool from which those individuals are chosen, or from where they end up, happens to be, for whatever reason, much more skewed toward being politically conservative. Now, that's just a reality, and so I think that's largely it. In terms of what gives me comfort, I love the there's several doctrines in the LDS Church that I think tie in so beautifully to progressive principles. The doctrine of eternal progression, the doctrine of continuing revelation, the doctrine, the doctrines that relate to Zion community and sharing freely of substance with all based on their needs. Those are beautiful scriptures. If you look at Mosiah 18:27, I think there's compelling verse in scripture in favor of progressive taxation. I believe in that. So there, I could go on for a long time. I mean, the doctrines of the atonement of Jesus Christ and redemption and mercy, and you know, there's room. Here's the thing: when my friends, and these are, I like these guys. They're friends of mine, Howard and Todd, I love these guys. And they tell me why they're Republicans. I go, yeah, I believe that. I believe that too. It's easy for me to relate to. I just think we need better balance here in the state of Utah right now. And I specifically think we need better balance in the church membership, primarily in the culture of the church. I'm not here to knock the leaders of the church in terms of their political affiliation. I don't think that's warranted or justified. I do think that the culture of the church needs some significant changing.
I just want to point out, we have three new LDS apostles that were called since the Tribune ran that. I'm pretty sure at least one of them is a Democrat. I'm not going to say who. The other thing I want to say, I meant to mention this earlier, but I live in, I represent the Bountiful North Salt Lake area as part of my district, and I think I'm the only member of the legislature. I have at least six of the apostles that live in my district. And I spend a lot of time wondering, because they all vote, whether they're going to vote for or against me next month.
Very good. Well, we have seen faithful LDS express with some candor their feelings about faith and politics. I also want to acknowledge that you'll see a lot of diversity among them. This is complicated. But we are very well served by people who are willing to step up, put their name on a ballot, go through the crucible of an election, and do their best to serve this state. Let's give them all a hand.
Well, we're wrapping up this discussion here. Thanks again to Alliance for a Better Utah for presenting this program. This program is made possible in part by the Hinckley Institute's Wayne Owens Fund. I'm Ross Chambliss, your humble curator and producer of this program. Thanks for listening.